Good morning. To call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order, silence of all cell phones. The time is 9:05 a.m. I'm joined today by Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick. Senator Stedman is away on other legislative business and will be back up here shortly. Senator Hoffman is in Anchorage for other issues that are personal. We've got two bills on the agenda today, Senate Bill 197 by Senator Bjorkman, Senate Bill 183 by the Labor and Commerce Committee. So, Senate Bill 197 is the Residential Building Code by Senator Jesse Bjorkman. This is our first hearing. Today we'll hear from the sponsor and have invited testimony and then set the bill aside. Senator Bjorkman, you want to come up to the table as long with your aid, please? Both of you can identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation of the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman, representing the northern portion of the Kenai Peninsula of the great state of Alaska. It is my honor and privilege to be with you, Mr. Chairman, and the honorable and esteemed members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee this morning. Senate Bill 197 would institute a statewide building code for homes that are built by contractors. Alaskans who hire a professional to build them a home should be able to count on the fact that what they are buying is safe and has the resale value that they expect. There are municipalities in Alaska that have residential building codes, but for homes that are built outside of those communities, there is no protection for Alaskans who hire a builder. Senate Bill 197 would establish a statewide residential building code so that a homeowner can hold a contractor accountable in court for shoddy work. This bill directs the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to adopt by regulation the 2018 International Residential Building Code published by the International Code Council, with allowances for Alaska-specific amendments and adopting updated versions of the code. The Residential Building Code would not supersede municipal codes where they currently exist or are adopted in the future, and this bill would not interfere with any other state building codes or the statutory requirements for other contractors, such as plumbers and electricians. Recreational cabins and homes that are built and occupied by the owner would also be exempted from this code. Senate Bill 197 does not create any enforcement or inspection functions at the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. It would be on building contractors to follow the building code and then the responsibility of the homeowners to seek legal remedy if the code is not followed and damages result. I introduced this bill at the request of the Alaska Home Builders Association. The association's current president, David Bunce, and past president, Eric Visser, are online to discuss the need for this bill and to answer any questions that committee members might have.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Senator Bjorkman? Just one of the opening questions I have. You almost make the insinuation that unless it's a unless a contractor builds the dwelling or the building, that they're unsafe to a certain degree. I'm sure that's not your intent, but how can you?
No, Mr. Chairman, absolutely not. Nope. So this code is specifically designed, and the application of the code by this bill is specifically designed to be a consumer protection for people who hire a contractor, a licensed builder, to build them a home. It does not apply to owner builders. There are many owner builders in the state of Alaska who build perfectly fine homes. But this provision that the bill allows for is a consumer protection for folks who hire a contractor, a licensed builder, to build them a home.
And so if the builder is somebody else besides the owner, does this also apply to them? Assuming the other person, not a contractor. I'm just thinking about my place in rural Alaska where you don't have any contractors and you don't have anybody to build and you don't want to necessarily build it yourself because it's above your mental capability sometimes to go in and think of what the wind loads are going to be and the snow loads are going to be and all those other issues that are out there.
Understood.
There's
no enforcement measure that I'm aware of in the state of Alaska that would prevent that kind of relationship from happening.
Okay. Ms. Ashi, you have anything to say? You have a sectional analysis or anything? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to go through the sectional analysis.
Before you do that, we have a question from Senator Bishop.
Senator Bjorkman, going back to your opening statement, so there's no enforcement, but you did mention something about if it was to go to, you know, a homeowner would have some legal standing to go to court. Did
Correct.
You say that?
Yes, sir.
So how do we educate, I'm just thinking out loud, how do we educate the homeowners? There's got to be documentation, right? So is the documentation onus both on the homeowner and the contractor during the phases of construction? So if something does fail, that, you know, here's pictures of the foundation, here's pictures of, you know, of every step of the process. Help me with that piece. As far as documentation when you go to a court of law.
Yes, the court would by nature require that there be evidence presented that a structure was not up to code and did not meet the standard that is in the code. Absolutely. And so currently the issue resides in the fact that if a customer of a contractor hires a contractor to build them a home, and then that home is somehow unsafe or uninhabitable due to that home not meeting the residential building code standard, there's no legal recourse that they have because there's not a code and statute to point to say that this contractor did not follow the law. That's the difficulty.
Follow up, Senator Bishop.
I just want to know, how are we going to educate the homeowner to make sure that they've got documentation that it was built to code? You know, is this bill going to educate the homeowner? Or you see what I'm saying? It's like a warranty to a degree. I'm just wanting to make sure we do what you want the bill to do. That's all.
You want to comment on that, Senator?
Understood. I think that education processes as far as quality of builders are available. If a homeowner were to want an inspection, there are many people around the state that provide those types of inspections, and those types of services are available.
Thank you. Any further questions by members of the committee? Sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Couple of questions, and if they're better answered by the invited testifiers, that's just fine. I guess the first one is the interaction between buildings and communities without building codes that are already standing and contractors under the bill. I read the bill says it doesn't apply to a building or a home that was built before it was enacted. But it also ties this code to a contractor's licensure. So if I've got a constituent with a home built by a contractor pre-code and they've got major work they need done, does the contractor now have to build to code, have to work to code when I bring them back into my house?
Senator Bjorkman.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we got a legal opinion on just that exact question. And according to Ledge Legal, if the home was built prior to this law being enacted, they would not. This law as currently drafted, this bill as currently drafted, would only apply to construction of a home that happens after the effective date.
Alderman Senator Keel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the next question then goes to the question of financing. And I know you don't have AHFC tying this directly to what they can finance in terms of homes, but bankers tend to be nervous fellas. And so are we creating a situation where someone's going to need to have their home brought up to code to get major renovations financed?
Senator Bjorkman?
Thank you, Senator Keel. And the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is also online available for questions. So maybe I'll let Jimmy Ord answer that question.
Is that okay with you, Senator Keel?
Good morning. This is Jimmy Ord, Director of Research and Rural Development at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I'm available to answer questions.
You want that question answered? You want that question to go to Mr. Ord?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That'd be great.
Mr. Ord, if you please identify yourself for the record and go ahead and give us the answer to Senator Keel's question.
Jimmy Ord, Director of Research and Rural Development at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, through the Chair, Senator Keel. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation has a process of ensuring that the homes meet our building and energy efficiency standards. So in order for a home to get financing, they have to go through and get a series of inspections. We work with the inspectors and energy raters who perform those inspections throughout the state. So whatever would be the case with this legislation, HSC would still have our lending requirements that would need to be in place.
Follow-up, Senator Keel. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, Mr. Ord, so that's helpful. It sounds like existing homes, older homes, need some significant or potentially need some significant retrofit to get additional financing today. This would, it sounds like, require them to come up to the building code to get financing tomorrow after the bill's enacted?
Mr. Ord.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, no, that is not accurate. We require homes that are going to meet our standard after the specific date that the legislation becomes enacted, or whatever the date is that we establish the building code. So if you're going to be performing work as a retrofit on an existing home, it would not need to be brought up to the code unless it's a substantial amount of work that's going to be done on the home. And there's a certain percentage that is going to encompass that. I do not have that off the top of my head at this moment in time, though.
Follow-up, Senator Keel.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. It would be helpful as a follow-up to know, get a sense of how substantial that is, just for the lay people among us who have some communities with building codes and some communities without.
Mr. Ward.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, yes, absolutely. We will follow up with that specific answer to your question.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanting to don't think the bill sponsor stated whether Alaska Finance Corporation supports or opposes the bill or neutral, since it does impact their program. So if Mr. Ord could, does he have an answer to that?
Understand the question?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, to your question, we currently do not have a position on the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ord. Follow-up, Senator Wilson?
No, just checking in.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor? If not, Ms. Ashii, would you please go ahead with the sectional analysis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 1 of Senate Bill 197 amends Alaska Statute 08.18.025A through C to add to the requirements for receiving or renewing a residential contractor endorsement from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to pass a test of the person's knowledge of the state residential building code. The bill would also require this endorsement to build a residence that is subject to the state residential building code. Section 2 would add a new subsection to Alaska Statute 08.18.025D that requires compliance with the state residential building code to maintain residential contractor endorsement unless the area where the residence is being built is governed by a municipal residential building code. Section 3 amends Alaska Statute 08.18.17116 to add to the definition of a residential contractor a reference to dwellings covered by the state residential building code. Section 4 would add a new subsection, Alaska Statute 08.18.17120, to define state residential building code as the code adopted under Alaska Statute 18.60.860A. Section 5 would amend AS 18.56.088C to add adoption and administration of a state residential building code to the duties of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Board. Section 6 amends AS 1856-300A to reference the state residential building code and the requirements for financing the construction or purchase of a residence. Section 7 amends Alaska Statute 18.56.300B to reference the state residential building code and the requirements for residents to pass a home inspection prior to purchase or loan approval. Section 8 amends AS 18.56.300E3 to change the definition of state building code from the Uniform Building Code adopted by the Department of Public Safety to the Residential Building Code adopted by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation under AS 18.60.860A. Section 9 adds a new section, AS 18.60.860, that requires the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to adopt by regulation as the State Residential Building Code the 2018 International Residential Code published by the International Code Council or a later version. The State Residential Building Code may be amended as necessary to accommodate Alaska's unique environment and must allow for the use of locally graded lumber produced and used under AS 41.17.630. The language allows municipalities to adopt a residential building code and provides that other codes in Alaska statutes supersede the state building code where they conflict. Exceptions to the state residential building code are provided for owner-built homes and recreational cabins. The section adds a new section, AS 18.60.865, that creates the Alaska State Building Code Council, appointed by the Board of Directors of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, to provide recommendations to the AHFC Board regarding the adoption of and updates to the State Residential Building Code. Section 10 would add language to the uncodified law that the provisions amended in AS 0818.025 and AS 08.18.025A in the bill would only apply to contractors receiving endorsements on or after the effective date. Also, the state residential building code adopted in AS 18.60.860 would only apply to new residences built on or after the effective date. And Section 11 provides an effective date of January 1st, 2025.
Any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Achi? Senator Wilson, did you have a question?
I will at a later time, Mr. Chair. Just want to check something.
There's no further questions by members of the committee. We'll go to an invited testimony. First up is David Bunce, owner of the Sterling Custom Homes and president of the Alaska State Housing Builder Home Builders Association. Mr. Bunce, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead with your testimony. Identify yourself for the record.
Okay. My name is David Bunce. I live in Sterling, Alaska, and I own Sterling Custom Homes, and I'm current president of Alaska State Home Builders Association. I started building homes on the peninsula in 1983. We ask that you please support the passing of SB 197, and this is why. In the late 70s and early 80s, there was a lot of homes being built. Builders from all over the country were here, and they were building homes like they did wherever they came from. In 1986, there was a crash in Alaska. Oil was just over $8 a barrel, and people were literally leaving their keys to their houses on the table and left the state. The banks were left with these houses, and a lot of them were substandard with foundations done like they did in the warm states that never saw frost. The state of Alaska around 1991, I believe, put statute in place that says if you want to build, if you want to be a contractor that builds homes, you need to take some classes on how to build in this climate and then take a test. When you pass the test, you get a residential endorsement on your contractor's license. Then you're required to get at least 16 hours of continuing education to renew your license, and that's where it stops. You have a license, you're educated, and there's no requirement to use what you've learned. So a system was put in place by Alaska Housing Finance that said if you're going to use their money, you will build to a standard, their standard. Your plans will be looked at to be sure they meet code. The foundations will be inspected prior to pouring concrete. Framing, electrical, plumbing will be inspected. Insulation and vapor barrier will be inspected, and then a final inspection. You will meet the insulation minimums, and your house will be sealed tight for energy standards, and you will methodically ventilate the home to keep the home and the occupants healthy. It is a system that is researched by the Cold Climate Research Center here in Alaska. Alaska Housing thinks that they finance about 30% of the homes, so obviously a majority of the homes are not required to be inspected. The inspections are done by private businesses at no expense to the state, or to Alaska Housing Finance. The inspectors are highly trained and regulated by Alaska Housing. The code is a minimum standard. It's not a high bar. Municipalities do make adjustments and can add to the minimum and to the process, and you could argue that that makes it burdensome. I think that most municipalities do add to the code, and I know my friends in Anchorage have a lot more frustration getting a project to completion than I do on the peninsula, building outside the cities. I could start a project tomorrow, and where they could start the process tomorrow and hope to break ground before next winter. This bill does not change that or create additional burden. This bill does not change how a truly professional contractor does his business. A truly professional contractor is already doing this. A contract that is building so his customers can use Alaska Housing Finance money is already doing this. Having Alaska Housing Finance administer the code is a no-brainer in my opinion. They're already doing it. Putting a board together with residential endorsed contractors and other pertinent members in the residential construction field as advisors allows us input. This should help maintain a code that works. These advisors are not paid and should have little additional expense to Alaska Housing Finance and very little, if any, to the state. So I would ask you to do a little exercise with me. I would like you to pick a number. I don't care what it is, any number. Don't let anybody else know what your number is. Write it down. Remember it. Keep it small enough that you can do some simple math with it. Now double that number. Add 6 to it. Divide it in half. And now subtract your original number that you started with. You should have all come up with the number 3. My point is, it doesn't matter where you come from. If you work the process, build it to code, we will all come up with the same answer, and that is a safe and affordable home. This bill is a consumer protection bill that protects the consumer, protects the banks, and it protects the contractor. Thank you for your consideration.
Any questions of Mr. Bunce by members of the committee? Mr. Bunce, I do have a question for you. You say you've got to have the plumbing inspected, you've got to have the electrical inspected. Let's say you're building a contractor's building a house out on St. Lawrence Island, Savunga, or even out at Diomede. You've got to pay for the inspector to get out there, and then you have to, there's a delay until he gets out there and inspects it. Is that true, sir?
That would be in place already now if you're going to use Alaska Housing Finance money. That's my understanding as a contractor, that if I was building up there and my client was going to use Alaska Housing Finance money, that I would have to have these inspections. If we're not using Alaska Housing Finance money, then no, it does not need to be inspected.
Well, with all due respect, Mr. Bunce, I think that the things that apply to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation also is going to apply to the other contractors that are going to be building dwellings out in rural areas. Is that true or is that not true?
My understanding of this bill is that's not true, that this bill does not mandate inspections.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Bunce. Any other questions for Mr. Bunce by members of the committee? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bunce, I appreciate your testimony. It's always good to talk to somebody with experience in the field. I wasn't clear on exactly what you were saying about the existing HFC standards about energy efficiency and the plumbing as compared to the residential building code. I mean, can you talk about how many requirements there are today versus how many requirements there would be tomorrow with the residential building code?
Mr. Bunce.
Sure. Yes, the Alaska Housing Finance Corp currently has in place, if we want to use their money, in a sense, a building code. And that's why we pointed to them to administer this code, is that it's already in place. They're already doing that.
Follow up, Senator Keel. Thank you very much, Mr. Bunce. Any further questions before Mr. Bunce, by members of the committee? If not, Senator Bjorkman, can you answer the question that I asked him about a contractor, let's say out of Nome, goes out to St. Lawrence Island and Savunga and builds a dwelling out there, and is it true that he has to wait until the elements of the inspections are done before he can continue?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. I think it's important to clarify and reiterate that the institution of this residential building code is not going to change anything for folks that are currently financing or will finance any building in the future. Whether it is the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation or a bank or other lender that is providing a loan for a building, this building code doesn't change anything for them if they're borrowing money for a home. Who this building code provision protects are cash buyers. Cash buyers who are paying cash to contractors to build them a home, and thus they are not required to go get an inspection. There is no fiduciary responsibility that a bank or a lending agency is protecting, and so they're not getting those inspections. The provisions of this bill protect cash buyers, and those are the people that would see a change. Is if you are a cash buyer and you hire a contractor to build you a house, it offers you a legal backstop in the law to point to. There are no inspectors that will be added. There's no enforcement that would be added, other than a customer of a contractor could point to the law and say, contractor, I hired you to build me a home. This home is supposed to follow the code. It did not. You're now responsible for not following this code. It doesn't change anything to do with financing that happens currently.
Any further questions by members of the committee for Senator Bjorkman? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Help me a little bit. I think this is a good bill, pretty good bill, and concept for protecting the consumer. But on the areas of where you need inspection, you know, you approve the plan that's submitted, submitted document. But when they have to go out and look at footings and foundations and the electrical installation, and they happen to be out in an area like Savunga or some area in southeast on an island somewhere, to get a physical inspector out there might be challenging. Is there a system where they could be, it could be done through some kind of a video conference or video inspection, or do we have a need for that, which is kind of maybe getting the edge of out of bounds on this particular bill, but it pertains to a similar subject. Do we have a problem there? And if we do, can we fix it?
Senator Bjorkman.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, thank you for the question. You are correct that is a different issue other than what the content of this bill deals with. Just to reiterate for the committee and the public, there is no inspection requirement. There is no code enforcement. No one that is going to be directed to go out into the field as a result of this bill. AHFC has a fiduciary responsibility to inspect the buildings that they finance. If Mr. Ord would like to comment on whether or not they need some remote capabilities to improve and make their process cleaner, then Mr. Ord would be welcome to comment on that for what's already happening. But this bill would not affect that, as it requires no inspections and no code enforcers.
Mr. Ord, do you have a comment or you have an answer for Senator Stedman?
Yes, good morning. Jimmy Ord, Director of Research and Rural Development at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Through the chair to the Senator's question, AHFC, I'm going to actually take one quick step back and discuss the process, just so that you're aware of AHFC and our requirements to ensure that residential structures meet our energy efficiency and building standards. Since the early 90s, we were required to ensure that homes meet these standards. And over the years, we've developed a process of developing building and energy standards in conjunction with the contractors, stakeholders in the housing communities. And we've set these standards to ensure that they are appropriate and specific to all parts of Alaska. And in recognition of that, you know, we understand that sometimes it is difficult for inspectors to get out to some of these communities. So we have the ability for inspectors to do this by alternative means through virtual inspections or photographs or whatever other means are necessary to ensure that the house meets our building energy efficiency standards. But again, remember that this only applies to financing for HFC properties and homes that we're going to lend a mortgage on.
Follow-up, Senator Snidman.
So if I heard him correctly, the answer is yes, they can do some form of inspection without having to physically fly an inspector out.
Are we interpreting your answer correctly, Mr. Ord?
Through the chair, Senator Snidman, yes, that is correct. We can do virtual inspections videophonically.
Thank you very much for your answer. Senator Bishop.
I'd just like to make mention to page 5, line 13, when it says the unit of a residential housing is located in rural areas, the person who makes the inspection may use methods, other methods other than personal physical inspection to make the inspection. That's approved by the corporation or other variations that's accepted by the corporation's discretion.
Thank you very much for pointing that out, Senator Bishop. Any further comments or questions by members of the committee for either the bill sponsor or the next? Our next invited testimony is going to be Mr. Eric Visser. Mr. Visser, are you on, sir?
Yeah, my name is Eric Visser from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm a member and past president of the Anchorage Home Builders Association as well as the Alaska State Home Builders Association. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Establishing a statewide building code has been on a list of priorities for the State Home Builders Association for decades. Through a lot of hard work from the association and feedback from stakeholders, I can honestly say that I think SB 97 is one of the best bills we've seen. The critical problem we're trying to solve is protecting consumers from contractors outside of the jurisdiction that don't already have an adopted code. This bill strikes the right balance between personal freedom and regulation for the industry. It allows builders, owner builders, to construct their homes as they see fit. It exempts recreational cabins, but it also requires a general contractor with a residential endorsement to build to a minimum standard, which gives consumers something to fall back on if they run into problems with construction of their homes. Another reason why I say this is the best bill yet is because it establishes the state, Alaska State Building Code Council. The council would be made up of 11 public members, with 6 of them being required to have residential endorsements. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the code development process on the national level, but sometimes there are some code proposals that come from the lower 48 that just aren't going to work in Alaska. The Alaska State Building Code Council gives residents of the state and local industry experts the ability to review updates to the national code and create local amendments that strike the right balance of housing affordability, safety, and the resiliency of homes. I ask that you support the passage of SB 197 from committee, and I'm open for any questions.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Visser by members of the committee? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to have somebody closely familiar with the codes and the standards. Thanks for being with us today. Can you just sort of compare the residential standards that AHFC has today with the, I think the baseline is the 2018 residential building code that the bill calls for? I mean, are we talking about a half inch of pages versus 3 inches, or are they identical, or what? How different are they?
Mr. Visser.
So the difference between the 2018 IRC versus what AHFC currently adopts, I think, and Jimmy can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure he has the exact number, but I think there's 10 pages of local amendments that are made to that nationally recognized code for the state of Alaska currently.
Follow-up, Senator Keel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your answer, Mr. Visser. Any other questions by members of the committee for Senator Bishop?
I
heard this bill, I think, a little bit in Labor and Commerce. I've been absent sometimes. And I just thought of a question, and I'm going to throw it out in the middle of the table. Does this any way affect tribal housing authorities? And I can ask that question for my local regional tribal housing authorities. It's just a question. If you guys did any research on that when you were drafting the bill?
No, I don't. I don't know that it would.
You're just more than you haven't gone ahead and checked it out. It's not that it's don't know about it. Okay, well, that's all we can do. Senator Bishop, you have a follow-up?
I'll call.
Mr. Ord, can you comment on the fiscal note for $250,000?
Jimmy Ord, Director of Research and Rural Development, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Yes, there is a fiscal note for this increased responsibility for the administration of the statewide residential building code. We anticipate that there's going to be one position required with a few needed expenditures for travel and other support services that are going to be necessary to support the Building Code Council.
And my understanding is not general funds or not undesignated general funds that are going to be used. Is that true, sir?
Yes, Senator Olson, it is our understanding that this is going to be corporate funds.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comment. The next fiscal note is a zero fiscal note by the Division of Corporations. Ms. Robb, do you want to come up and comment on that, please? Identify yourself for the record and go ahead and tell us why it's a zero fiscal note, which we all like to see, but sometimes you need some explanation where you're dealing with something that's very expensive, where somebody's building something and having to get different contractors that are not cheap necessarily. But it's certainly something that stands for a long time. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing at the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. As you noted, Mr. Chair, we do have a zero fiscal note for this bill. This bill touches the division because it requires that we add knowledge of the residential building code to the examination that's required for construction contractors to obtain a residential endorsement, and that is a cost that we'll be able to absorb.
Any questions by Ms. Robb, by members of the committee? If not, if you start going into enforcement of some kind of an issue where a contractor's license is there, you handle the license, is that correct, of the corporations?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. We do license construction contractors.
And if there is a claim against a contractor, does that not cost money for your department or your division?
Mr. Chair, it does. So my understanding of the intent of the bill, and certainly the sponsor is here to answer a question, but is that, you know, it is really envisioned that the enforcement would be someone's ability to sue a builder should they have failed to build a house to code. But certainly when we receive complaints against our licensees, we do investigate those complaints, and those costs are currently borne by the licensees. We're required statutorily to include all of those expenses in license fees.
Sure. Any questions from Ms. Robb by members of the committee? If not, Senator Bjorkman, you want to comment on her assessment of what the zero fiscal note is in relation to a claim that's going to be against a contractor?
I agree with Director Robb's assessment that those claims are made in Superior Court, and those costs are borne by the party who would lose that court case.
Sure. Senator Wilson.
Thank you. I do have a question for Ms. Robb. I thought that we started to include general funds for investigations on licensees. Is that not the case for this group of folks?
Ms. Robb.
Through the chair to Senator Wilson. So last year in the governor's budget for FY24, he did propose to change the fund source for investigations to general fund. That fund source shift was not accepted by the legislature. So currently right now they are still paid for by licensees, but the governor has introduced a bill that would enact that fund source shift because we do see investigations as a public safety issue.
Thank you.
Follow up, Senator Wilson. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming up this morning. I'm sorry, Senator Keel.
Actually, it's a question for the sponsor, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I guess I'm cogitating on AHFC's fiscal note, which seems to be for the cost of staffing the council. And if I understood the previous answers to questions correctly, we have a code. It's basically the code that this bill calls for with about 10 pages of amendments, which we've already got the staff to make. Where's our $250,000 of value in a council to do what we've already basically done?
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you very much through the chair, Senator Keel, for the good question. I'm not certain that it would cost that much money to have a council like this one that would meet periodically to advise AHFC on the code. I think that the council definitely has value for the reasons that Mr. Visser stated as to making sure that the residential code is accommodating of all of Alaska's climates and culture. AHFC already has undertaken that work, but I'm not completely convinced that it would indeed cost that much money to have a council as stated in this bill. I would want someone to more carefully show me that money.
But, thank you.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for coming out this morning. Any further questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor or his aide? If not, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside. I want to thank Senator Bjorkman for coming up with the bill that in the past he's done some very good construction bills like lumber grading, which we greatly applaud. We'll set this bill aside for the moment. The next bill coming up is Senate Bill 183, Workers' Compensation Benefits Guarantee Fund by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. This is the first hearing on this. We'll have Senator Bjorkman and Chuck Collins come on up and present the bill, please. Senator Bjorkman, go ahead and present the bill, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, Chair Olson, and members of the Senate Finance Committee. Senate Bill 183 has to do with the sweepability of the Workers' Compensation Benefits Guarantee Fund. In recent years, injured workers have had to wait as long as 6 months to receive benefit payments because the Workers' Compensation Benefits Guarantee Fund has been empty. The fund's revenues come from civil penalties against employers who do not carry the statutory required workers' compensation insurance and reimbursements from employers for injured employee benefits when the state is able to recover them. Because both the revenue stream and the benefits payouts are irregular, there are times when the benefit claims are made and there is not sufficient revenue to make these payments. In the past, the fund has been carefully managed to build up reserves that decoupled payouts from revenues, and claims could be paid in a timely manner regardless of when they were received. However, since fiscal year 21, the Constitutional Budget Reserve sweep has cleared the unobligated balance from the fund each year, removing the reserves that has allowed for timely payments. Senate Bill 183, which was introduced by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, which I chair at the request of the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board, the bill would move the fund outside of the general fund so that it is no longer subject to the CBR sweep and can gradually rebuild its reserves in order to pay claims that are received. Chuck Collins, Director of the Director of Workers' Compensation at the Alaska Department of Labor, is here to speak more on the subject and answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor? If not, Mr. Collins, please go ahead and tell us what it's all about. And if you'd like, go ahead and talk about the fiscal note as well.
Charles Collins, Director of Workers' Compensation, Department of Labor. We brought this to the Senator's attention as a resolution from the Workers' Compensation, the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board, who, since the inception of the Benefits Guarantee Fund in 2005, have seen it as their duty to be good stewards of the money that was brought in by our Special Investigations Unit, who work extremely hard every day to ensure that all Alaskans that are working for an employer are covered under workers' compensation insurance, a very serious task for us. The money that is put into the Benefits Guarantee Fund under AS 2330082 is completely made up of, you know, fines and settlements from uninsured employers and any interest that is gained on that. And through the years, knowing that at any time an uninsured worker could be grievously injured and have no benefits whatsoever available to them, either for medical or indemnity, and we have no control over when this may happen. So for a number of years, we were able to, shall we say, grow the fund to a point where we were more comfortable with being able to always pay benefits, knowing full well that at any time a very grievous injury could happen, and unfortunately that happened recently. And this has caused, in past years, for the fund to not be able to pay those weekly stipend checks to families that rely solely upon the fund for any money that they might have to pay simple little things like food and utilities and rent. And so we humbly ask the Finance Committee to help us move this fund out of the general fund and make it a portion of the state treasury that would not be able to be swept as easily. As for the fiscal note, the fund supports one position. We have a collections officer that deals with those that are continuing to make payments and works over it. It's a zero fiscal note. We already do everything that is in, you know, it's already a portion of the budget here. The only money funds are spent on is if we have to use the Department of Law to do any legal action for the fund itself, and then one position there. So I'm available to answer any questions you like on it.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The sweep issue was before the committee for several years as we worked through this. And those watching at home, if there's a debt owed to the Constitutional Budget Reserve, any excess money at the close of the fiscal year is called to suffice the debt of the CBR, which is about 10, 12 billion bucks or whatever it is, 10 billion. So when these funds were swept on July 1 or June 30th, how long does it take the department then with a zero balance to start paying out the claims these last 2 years in 22 and 23?
Mr. Collins.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that's a great question. So direction from OMB, since the legislature was kind enough to authorize us to spend money, OMB has directed us to pay those benefits, and whether or not there was in these past years, whether or not we had income or not. So our revenue has trailed, you know, basically our expenditures for a few months, depending on the situation, which is not controllable by mankind, since we don't know when settlements might happen or injuries may happen. And currently the fund has been able to make those payments. You will probably know that we are asking for a supplemental this year from the general fund because we have a couple of very horrible injuries that Alaskans, you know, and we anticipate before the end of the fiscal year spending another $500,000 out of that fund, more than the 780 plus thousand that we normally spend a year. So,
Bob's understanding.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think it'd be nice for the committee to see a monthly cash flow statement for FY22 and FY23. This is one of the reasons this committee was very concerned about not having a reverse sweep, because those funds within all those categories that were susceptible to the sweep was thoroughly reviewed by OMB to make sure there wasn't any excess funds in it, and also by us here at the table and the other body, frankly, looking for any excess funds. So this is a collateral damage to the unfortunate politics that left us unable to do a reverse sweep. So I think we need to see these cash flow statements on a month-by-month basis. I'd like to see how deep the red ink actually is. And also, Mr. Chairman, I think it's a little, it's related to this bill, but it'd be interesting to know how many other accounts are facing similar issues that are that were once protected by the reverse sweep, so their account balances weren't brought to zero.
Mr. Collins, are you able to give us that information?
Chairman Olson, we will put every effort at it, and the answer is, of course, yes. We will be glad to supply that to you.
And when can we expect it?
I'm going to defer the answer of that because I have to ask the young lady that takes care of that. So probably a couple of days, tops.
Sir Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to echo the co-chair's comments on the reverse sweep accounts. Yeah, I think this is just one of many treachery or secondary casualties of us not doing a reverse sweep into accounts, and I just want to find a fix for all these accounts. And I understand the importance of this one, this Senate Bill 183 in front of us, but I feel that there are other accounts that are just as worthy of being fully funded and going in perpetuity, that account holders know those funds are there, those programs can go into perpetuity, and just would also like to see that whole balance, see if there's a possible fix that we can get beyond the situation of this reverse sweep issue.
So, Senator Wilson, if I hear you correctly, you'd like some entity like Pledge Finance to go ahead and look into this, some of these issues?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any further questions of Mr. Collins or the bill sponsored by, or the committee sponsor, committee bill sponsor on this bill? Okay, if that's the case, then if there are no questions, then we'll go to open public testimony. Anybody in the room want to go ahead and testify? Anybody online want to testify? We'll go ahead and close public testimony. Set this bill aside. This concludes our agenda for today. Next hearing will be tomorrow, March 7th at 9 a.m. We'll be hearing three bills, Senate Bill 189 to extend the Alaska Commission on Aging, HB 120, hunting and license, and hunting and fishing licenses for non-resident students, Senate Concurrent Resolution 10, the Seafood Industry Task Force. There's no other business to come before the committee. We're adjourned at 10 o'clock.